Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults. Here are your hosts, Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I am Judy Davis, and I am here with my partner in crime and co-host Sandy Fowler. And today we are talking about marriage and relationships and how it affects our kids. I know that my husband and we try to do things right. We have been together for, 27 years, almost 27 years. And we've been through all those things, good, bad, ugly, and everything like that. And it certainly seemed that at different points, it affected our kids. And now that the kids are grown and gone in relationships of their own, with babies of their own, I'm finding out that some of the stuff we did impacted them in ways I had no idea.
Yeah, I know. You're so right there, Judy. I mean, certainly Tom and I have lived through a lot together over 27 years. And again, I've seen it affect our kids for better or for worse. I've had some really interesting conversations with them, some of them prompted by our guests, and then it would lead into this relationship side of things. And I start to see how, you know, we have impacted them. And so, you know, we all want a strong and healthy marriage, and there's a lot of advice out there. But I kind of wonder sometimes, like, where did that advice come from? Why are they saying that? And that's why I love working with today's guest. It's Dr. Terry Orbuch. And Dr. Orbuch is nationally known research scientist at the Institute for Social Research at the University of Michigan. She is a psychologist and a professor at Oakland University in Michigan. She has studied the marriage and divorce and romance relationship patterns of thousands of individuals nationwide for it's over 25 years. And what is best about it is not only does she have all that science and data and research, she is a genius at taking research-based information and turning it into something that the rest of us can use. And it's that combination of research savvy and common sense that has turned her into one of this country's most trusted relationship experts, publishing over 40 articles and being quoted in national publications like USA Today, The New York Times, Boston Globe, Reader's Digest, and more. She has authored books, including Five Simple Steps to Take Your Marriage from Good to Great. And today she's going to be giving us insights into our marriages and our teens. So Dr. Orbuch, thank you so much for joining us on Mighty Parenting. It's so great to be working with you again and so close to my being on your show.
Absolutely. Well, it's always a pleasure working with you, Sandy and Judy. I love being here today.
Hey, we are excited to have you. And it's interesting because both Sandy and I kind of alluded to the fact that we now, hindsight being 2020, our relationships and their impact in kids. And I just would love for you to answer the question, what is the relationship between our kids and our marriage and our children's well-being?
Well, everything. That's the answer that I would give, Judy. Everything that we do with our partner is going to affect our children and their well-being. And you talked about the goods and the bads, but I think the first thing that's so important is that our kids need to know, and they're watching, that there are goods and bads, so that it can't be all good and you do the conflict or the disagreement in the bedroom, and it can't be all bad either. They need to see the ups and downs. But I think most importantly after that is that our kids are watching us. They're observing us. They're looking at how we relate, how we do conflict, how we talk to one another, and how we treat one another. And what we do then is what they will do in their relationships over time.
Interesting. So when you say what they will do in their relationships, does that transfer into just their romantic relationships or all of their relationships? And I'm saying this because I've seen my daughter, well, I'll experience my daughter doing something in us having a conflict. It will irritate me. But once I take a step back, I'll realize that she learned it from us.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, Sandy. I think that's true, that what our kids learn from us and how we treat our partner is relevant for all relationships. For example, if our kids see us, my husband and I, right, I've been married for 25 years, have a disagreement at the dinner table, and how we deal with it, how we deal with the conflict, is how they're learning to deal with conflict in all of their relationships. Now, especially their intimate romantic relationships, but also with their friendships, also with their siblings, also at work with their colleagues. So if my husband and I don't resolve that well, that's then how they will resolve the conflict in their relationships. So if we freeze each other and don't talk to one another because we're having a disagreement, which is not a positive way to deal with conflict, that's how they then learn to deal with conflict as they grow older and have a lot of their own relationships. But if we talk it out, if we disagree, but we resolve our conflict, which I think is the key when people are resolving conflict, that you resolve it well, you can even agree to disagree, then our kids will also learn that that's important in terms of conflict and disagreements and tension in their relationships, all of their relationships.
Okay, so if it's going to be impacting all of their life and all of their relationships, I go, well, we yell and we have all the things that you're saying, the freeze out, all of those things have happened at different times. And I look back and go, I thought things were resolved, but I don't know if I ever modeled that resolution with my child so that they could see it. Because oftentimes it's not a sitcom that everything is handled in a half hour, and we know our kids are busy and moving and doing all kinds of things. And sometimes processing an argument takes more than a day.
And I think that's fine, Judy. That's actually positive that your kids learn that at the moment, at the dinner, you can't resolve things. Tension, emotion is high. But over 2 days, one person, maybe you came back and said to your husband, I'm sorry. I might have said something that I didn't mean to say. I apologize sincerely. In the future, I will try not to do that again. Even if it was 2 days, 2 weeks later, your kids learn that, yes, people do have disagreements and they do yell or shout or say something. But if they do, 1 week, 2 weeks later, somebody gives an apology, somebody comes back and says, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. Those are all lessons and those are all modeling, I think, that's really healthy and really positive for our kids.
So where is the line, Dr. Orbach? Because there are certain things that my kids seeing me in a relationship is one thing, and seeing, like you said, the good and the bad and the ugly. But where is the line that is my husband and I have a relationship that is separate from the family dynamic? And where is that healthy place to be where I allow them to see everything and where I don't?
Mm-hmm. Good question. I think that they don't need to see everything. I think that there's a personal relationship that you have with your husband in terms of all the talk that you do, in terms of even all the conflict or disagreement that you do does not need to be in front of your children, especially if there are topics that are not age relevant. So if it's about money, if it's about concerns about a parent, if it's concerns about your intimate sexual life, those may be topics that you want to make sure that are age relevant. So you don't need to do all of your conflict, all of your relationship in front of your children. But I do think that there are parents who do no conflict, no disagreement in front of children. So I see those kids later on, and as soon as they're in a relationship, let's say a romantic relationship, where there is conflict or tension, they think that's a sign that the relationship is in trouble, and they're out of the relationship, rather than, I saw my parents have conflict. I might not have seen all the conflict. I might not have seen conflict about all topics, because I know they have a private life to themselves. In fact, for me growing up, my father is a psychiatrist, and he would come home. My mother is a teacher, and so she would get out earlier than my dad would come home. But I remember very vividly, my dad would come home, and we would all run up to him. There are three of us. I'm the oldest. And we would all run up to him, and we would want to have his attention and talk to him. And he would say, I love you. I think your days are very important, but your mother and I need to spend 10 minutes alone talking about certain things. And I thought, wow, now that I'm adult, I say, parents need time alone. They're not going to discuss everything with me. And that's good. So I observed that my parents have a private life and my parents have a life in front of us.
I love that. And when my kids were little, actually quite little, my husband and I were doing at home date nights because we couldn't get a sitter or didn't want to get a sitter or whatever. And the kids were used to that idea that this was mom and dad's time. They were just not allowed to come in the room. Because they were fairly young, you know, we set it up and made a special thing for them too, but it wasn't about their special night. It was about our special night. And so they got to have some privileges of their own at the same time. But I wanted to go back. You talked about this idea that, you know, it's okay for the kids to see conflict, not all the conflict. And certainly, you know, we don't want them to hear everything we're going to not agree on or argue about. So if the kids are not necessarily present, but just hearing this sort of arguing or yelling or whatever it is it a good idea then to just acknowledge that with them in almost a cursory way? Just, hey, you know, I don't know if you guys heard, mom and dad were pretty irritated with each other. But, you know, we worked it out and everything is okay now, or we came to a resolution. Like, what's a good way to handle that? Because they hear it. You know, most of us don't live in houses big enough that they're not going to hear if you get into a pretty heated discussion.
Well, I love what you said, Sandy, first of all. I think, yes, first, that kids do hear the conflict and the disagreement, even if you're doing it over the phone, and they listen to your tone of voice. They listen to how you're speaking. And we should say, even if they're seeing you directly, they're looking at your body language too. So even when the words might be positive, if you're not looking or if you're showing body language that shows tension and conflict, they pick up on all of it. So, you know, kids are smart. And so they will hear it, as you said. But I love what you also said second of how you want to go back to your kids. First, tell them, I know that you might have heard that mom and dad or we were arguing. We were disagreeing. We still care about each other. And I think that's the important message first that you want to give, that people who love each other, people who respect one another, people who care about each other can still disagree and have tension and not like some of the behaviors that the other does. And it's similar to you as a parent and your child. You love your child, you care about them, but you may not like everything they do or how they behave. And so talk to your kids about that. You can even do the comparison of, you know, when you do this as a child, I don't like that. And it's very similar to your dad or my partner. So I still care about him or her, but here's why we were disagreeing, because we were upset about something. But know that, as you said, Sandy, third point that's really important is we're dealing with it. We resolved it. We are doing this to resolve or manage the situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think back to my childhood and being upstairs listening to my mom and dad argue about something or anything like that, especially when I was younger. But then when I became a teenager, which a lot of our listeners, that's their parenting, those teens and 20-somethings, and their knowledge base is a little bit wider, are there certain problems in our marriages that having teens in our household that contribute and make being married harder?
Well, I think that teens and the issues of parenting teens are greater than the issues and the problems of parenting younger kids. Because when our kids are younger, we're worried about, I don't know, toilet training or having them brush their teeth or sharing their toys, right? Now, those are extremely important. But when we have teens, we're talking about expressing emotions in respectful ways. We're talking about how to have a romantic relationship. And we're talking about how to communicate with people. We're talking about going to other people and asking for support. Those are the issues that are very important as kids become adults. So I think the issues and the problems are even more significant. And I encourage parents to sit down and have conversations about all of those issues, whether it be sex, whether it be how to support someone when they come to you and ask for emotional support, or whether it is how to communicate in a healthy way. So sit down and have those conversations with your children. I think our kids are learning so much earlier that they have a sense. They're watching movies, they're watching television, they're observing their other friends, that if we can intervene, if we can have an impact in that learning process, it's so significant as they grow older over time. So have the difficult conversations. And you can even sit down and say, you know, I'd love to talk to you about sex. Are you ready to talk to me about that so that you can gauge their response? I'll never forget my daughter, who's now 24 and much older, obviously. At the age of 12, I went into her bedroom and I said, you know, you're 12 years old. I teach sexuality to university students. If you want to talk about it, come to me. I'm here for you. And she said, Mom, Jason, my friend, you know, just a friend down the block, told me everything I need to know about sex. And I said to her, well, what did you learn? And she said, well, when two people are in a bed with their clothes on, they're having sex. And I said, well, I'm glad that you and Jason are at least talking, you know, about the topic. And it sounds like you're talking about it in a very respectful way. But what he's saying is not correct. If you want to know what sex really means, come and talk to me. I am always here to have the conversation with you. And she said, Mom, at that time, Jason knows much more than you. I said, okay. I said, that's fine, but he's wrong. So when you really want to know, come and talk to me. And she then came to me at another point in time. We laugh about that conversation now. And she said, Mom, I knew Jason was wrong, but I couldn't have the conversation at that moment. So I came to you 4 or 5, I can't remember exactly, months later to have that conversation. So as parents of teens, at least be there. Tell your kids you're there to have those conversations about relationships, about people, about communication, and about sex.
That's great, Terry. So yes, these are important topics, and they, as you said, you know, they are harder issues, more difficult issues. So let's switch over to the relationship, the parents and them needing to agree on these issues. I think it was probably easier to agree on how to potty train or whether to use a binky or, you know, when the kids should learn to ride a two-wheeler. Any of those things was a lot easier than as parents agreeing on not necessarily the moral underpinnings, because you tend to marry someone who's going to, you know, be in alignment with your moral values. But how to go about that with your kids? You know, how can we as parents handle when we maybe don't see eye to eye or we disagree on parenting issues? Because I think in the teen years, this becomes a little more volatile for the parents.
Well, I think as parents, you're always going to have issues, topics, subjects that you disagree on. I mean, we can't expect to agree on everything with our partner or spouse. We come from two different families and backgrounds and neighborhoods and sometimes religions and classes and ethnicities. I mean, we are not going to agree on everything. So the most important thing, Sandy, is that you do the disagreements well. So I encourage parents to have conversations with each other and say, we're not going to disagree on everything. I mean, we're not going to agree on everything. There's going to be ups and downs, but it's how we manage those times, how we, you know, resolve those topics that we disagree on. And then also as parents, you want to incorporate or add these simple, healthy strategies to have healthy relationships. For example, most important in terms of the couples over time that I've studied is that you want to do and say simple, positive things to your partner often. That means every single day that you wake up, you want to say something to your partner. I love you. You're the best parent. You're my best friend. I value you. I would still choose you. Thank you for being in my life. Any words of what I call affirmation, or do something that affirms that they're special and that they're noticed. You know, turn on the coffee pot in the morning because you know your partner needs coffee. Make them their favorite dessert, put gas in the car, call them and say, I love you. So every single day, do or say something special. And what I know studying couples for over 30 years is that that simple act makes couples happier over time. We all want to be noticed. We don't want to be taken for granted. And so when our partner sees us and notices us, we are happier over time, significantly happier. And our kids will see that as well. And do that for your kids. Say or do something special that they're noticed, so that they're noticed as well.
I love that.
Yeah. What are other things that, because I know in your book, you talked about how most marriages with a good foundation, most marriages start with a good foundation, but then it can erode over time. Or like you said, we can build it up over time. So what are some of the other things that we can do that just help build that stronger relationship, which will carry us through all of the other conflict and everything so much better?
Absolutely. So second, I would say that you want to practice what I call the 10-minute rule every single day. And these are everyday things. And I say every day, but if it's every other day, that's fine. But they're so simple. They're not big things. And so what I mean by the 10-minute rule, most couples think that they're really talking to one another, but they're not. What they're really communicating about is what I call maintenance talk, who's going to pick up the kids, who's going to do the groceries, call mom or pay the bills. So every single day, try to devote 10 minutes a day to talking about something other than these four topics: work, family or children, who's going to do what around the house, or your relationship. So those four topics don't talk about for 10 minutes and instead talk about something else. And you can talk about so many different things, Sandy or Judy. You can talk about movies and, you know, the weather or sports, but you can also talk about what would you do if you weren't doing what you're doing now, or where would you like to travel to if you won the lottery, or what are you most proud of in your life? And those are the topics that connect us, bond us to our partner, and then make that relationship happier and healthier over time.
Now, that first question is the topic that can land you smack dab in a tour in the U.S. military, because that's the question I asked. And next thing you know, we're now, you know, active duty Army family. But, you know, I love those things, those taboo topics, to kind of, it really helps you connect in a way that I think is missing oftentimes, which leads me to say, is there something that we do as couples or things like that that causes our marriages to be more challenging or even
on the extreme end to fail?
I think that there are several different things. First of all, most of us put our relationship on the back burner when we're having children. And I think parenting takes up a lot of time, and it is one of my most cherished roles in life. But we need to remember that if we want our relationship to be there during parenting and after parenting, right, young, teen, in our house children, we need to remember our relationship. So take it off of the back burner. So that's the first thing that we forget to do. The other thing is that we all love routine. We all like, you know, habits and doing things that are predictable. But that's exactly the thing that makes our marriages challenging. Because at the same time that we love habits and we love routine, that equals boredom. If we do that habit or routine too much or too often, and boredom is what eats away at happiness. So instead of the routine and what I would call a relationship rut, change things up just a little bit. You need to upset your routine, shake it up gently. Just a little bit. So that may be, instead of, like you said, Sandy, date night out, have a picnic in the living room with your partner when your kids are in bed or watching a movie. Upset the routine just a little bit, which adds excitement, gets rid of boredom, increases passion and stability and happiness in a relationship over time.
You had mentioned in one of our other chats before, Terry, to learn something new together.
And newness is so important. Newness equals passion. So another way to decrease boredom and increase passion and excitement and happiness is exactly that, Sandy. So anything new, you can take a new class together, a new sport, a new hobby. Any new activity that you do with your partner will increase excitement and passion and lead to happiness and stability.
I like that newness equals passion. And we're at the end of our time, but I had one question I really do want to ask. So you spent all these years studying so many people, seeing what works, what doesn't. In all that research, what was the most surprising thing that you found?
I think the most surprising thing is that men and women see relationships differently, and what's important to men is not important to women and vice versa. And I know that sounds trite, but as a scientist and as a psychologist, we've been learning that there are so many things out there where there aren't differences between men and women. But when it comes to relationships, we are still socialized. We are still taught to view relationships differently, to express emotions in relationships differently. And what's important to men is still different than what's important to women in relationships. So that was surprising to me as a scientist. But as an individual, the one thing that was even more surprising is that you shouldn't let little things slide. Don't push them under the rug. Address them as soon as you can. Because if you don't, little things become big, and it's the big things that are hard to unpack and affect relationships.
So powerful. So powerful. Oh my gosh.
It is. And so just to hit a few of our high points again. So basically, everything that we do with our partner affects our children's well-being. So what we want to do is recognize that they are watching and let them see that there are good and bad times in relationships. Don't hide that conflict from them. I mean, not necessarily showing them deep inside of every conversation, but acknowledging the conflict and letting them at least sometimes see how you resolve it, or letting them know that you did resolve it, or, you know, you might have heard us arguing, but we still care about each other and we're working it out. And just letting them see that process so they understand when they run into it in their own relationships that this is normal. And as our kids get older, there are parenting issues that are harder to deal with. So it's about conversations. Parents needing to have conversations with their kids about the big issues, parents need to have conversations with each other about how they want to handle these big issues with their kids. And it's important.
It's important. That is great. That is so perfect. I love what you just said.
Well, they're your words. So thank you for sharing them. In the last piece, we talked about having that healthy relationship. So what we want to do is avoid things that we tend to do that do hurt our relationship. Science has shown us that this is what ruins relationships. And that is to put our relationships on the back burner when our kids show up, to get really stuck in habits and routines into big ruts that actually create boredom, because that will challenge our marriage. What we want is to remember that newness equals passion. So upset our routine, maybe learn something new together, just tweak things a little bit so it's not always the same. And then a couple of things we can do to build the healthy side of our relationship is to, I love these two because they're so simple and it is kind of this daily thing. Just do or say something, some simple positive thing to your partner, hopefully every day or as soon as you realize you didn't, mm-hmm. and follow the 10-minute rule. Each day or as often as you can, as a couple, give yourselves 10 minutes to talk to each other where you don't talk about the taboo topics of work, family, chores, or your relationship. And there's so much here. There's so much that's interesting. I've had the pleasure of reading your books. I know you do so much. So Dr. Orbach, where can listeners find you if they want more from you?
Thank you. Well, my website is Dr. Terry, thelovedoctor.com. So that's my website, and I have a Twitter account and a Facebook account, and I'm constantly posting really good information about relationships. I also have a newsletter that I send out that's free, a monthly newsletter, so you can sign up on my website for that as well.
And your information is so practical and easy to use. I've used it since I've met you years and years ago, and it's been monumental. So I appreciate everything you say, and thank you for being here. And it is time to dig into Real Talk, where today Sandy and I are going to be discussing the importance of choosing your own adventures when it comes to travel, right after this quick message.
Parenting is the toughest job you'll ever love. It's a common phrase because it's so true. And as the teen years roll around and you start seeing changes in your child and you may start wondering, what's going on? Are they okay? Is this normal? And again, as they move out of the house, go out on their own, go off to college, you see more changes. And sometimes the changes are perfectly normal. And sometimes they're an indication that your child's in over their head, that there are things going on that they can't handle. And the parents' worry and their concern is, how do I know the difference? Well, now there's a book that can tell you. It's Warning Signs, and it is a parenting guide to help you understand about those changes and to help you figure out if your child could be at risk for depression, addiction, or suicide. The book will take you by the hand, walk you through that understanding, give you the confidence to be able to take the next step, to have a conversation or whatever it is that you need to do, and to give you some idea on some of the paths that you can follow. You can go to dasium.net to the store in the shop there and get your own copy.
Okay, it is time for Real Talk, and Judy mentioned we were going to be talking about, you know, choosing your own adventures when you travel. Well, recently I saw one of those Choose Your Own Adventures books that used to be, well, I think they came out when we were kids. And I saw that, and then I, you know, saw all this stuff about summer and vacations and family and stuff, and my brain just kind of melded it together into going, well, what if you did a choose your own adventure family vacation? And I don't mean picking an adventure up front. I mean doing it like the book. If you remember reading in these books, or maybe you didn't read them, so you're reading through the book, and then you're given a choice that you would pick the direction you want your book to go. It's like you can have this happen or this happen kind of a thing. And that just keeps happening throughout the book. So every time you read the book, you can essentially create a new story. And I just think that would be really cool for a family vacation. Tom and I did a vacation like that. I mean, we didn't say we were going to do that, but that's what we did. It was a very long time ago. It was him and I, and our oldest was only 8 months old, and we went to England and Scotland for 2.5 weeks. But we had no plan. We bought our plane tickets, we rented a car, and we made a reservation at a B&B for the first night of our trip, and that was it. We landed in London, we traveled down to Bath and moved into our B&B, and we stayed there until we were done with Bath. Then we got out our travel atlas. We went, okay, let's see. Emma will be happy in her car seat for about 2.5 hours, and then there'll be nonstop screaming. So we're going to draw a circle around here. How far can we get in 2 hours? And then we would just look at that circle and go, huh, where do we want to go? So I'm going, well, what if we did that now? What if we took our kids and we went on that kind of a vacation where we just picked a place and then, you know, each day we plan the next day's adventure in that place? Or like we did here, you know, you pick a place and you start there, and the next day you go, well, where do we want to go next, and travel to different places? But you kind of either agree on it as a family each time you're ready to switch it up, or you give everybody a chance to pick their own. I just think it would be a really fun, different way to do a vacation. I don't know, what do you think, Jude?
I really do. And when you bring this up, at first I was like, oh my gosh, that could lead to so many issues. But then when I step back, I'm thinking, well, what else could it do? It could teach our kids resilience. It could teach our kids flexibility. It could, even if everything fell apart and it was just a horrible disaster, I know a lot of our experts that we've chatted with over the last few months have said how important it is to fail, and what you do after, it's so good. So maybe
so here's an opportunity for failure.
Exactly. So I think that it's something that could be really, really powerful, especially in a day and age where so often our lives are micromanaged and planned out to the very minute.
And you know me, I'm a planner. When I first told you that Tom and I did this and went to England, before I could even keep talking, the first thing out of your mouth was, you went on vacation without a plan?
I know.
And it's the best vacation I ever had, because thinking about what you just said, you know, all these things that can go wrong. And yes, things can go wrong. And there was one day we couldn't find a place to stay. We stayed in this nasty, nasty B&B that night. When we woke up at 4 a.m, I'm like, I can't go back to bed in here. We left. We put the money on the nightstand and we left because it was so bad. Mm-hmm. But the rest of the vacation was great. And some of the things that got screwed up were, there was no tension. There was no anxiety about rushing through and getting to the next place where we had a reservation. We started out that vacation getting the wheels stolen off our rental car. So we ended up staying in Bath for an extra 2 days just to sort things out with the rental car company. Can you imagine the domino effect if we had planned an entire 2.5 week vacation?
You know, that points out a thing of expectations, right?
Yeah.
Maybe the reason that it was such a powerful vacation, and the fact that, like you just said, you got all the tires stolen off of your car in your first destination. What's really interesting to me in all the times that you've shared about this whole vacation experience, never has that come up.
No, it wasn't an issue.
Exactly. And I think it would have been an issue had you had expectations about what the vacation should be in order for it to be fun.
Interesting. And yeah.
As a whole, I've seen it happen in my life, especially with my dad. He was someone who would get in his head how a conversation, a vacation, a work thing, how it was supposed to unfold. And then he would get disappointed if it didn't happen exactly the way it was supposed to unfold. And I think back to my mother purchased a fly-in fishing trip for my dad and my brothers when they were teenagers. I think that there must have been tension, or who knows why she ended up doing that. I don't know. But she purchased this thing. And one of the contingencies of him going on this vacation was that he had to promise that he wouldn't have expectations of what it was going to do with my brothers. He couldn't have expectations of the long talks they'd have sitting in the boat or the fun time they'd have scaling the fish. He just had to go and live in the moment. And your idea of choose your own adventure is just that. And I think it can be powerful if we don't have expectations of what our experiences are supposed to be. And this is one great way as a family, you can make sure that you have no expectations and actually live in the moment without the micromanaging planning and without our Google calendars and without all those things.
Yeah, when you were talking about the expectations and the disappointment, what it brought back to me is this wasn't vacation, but it's when we're at home, when the girls were younger, I would plan out girl time. And I say plan out, I don't mean I planned it out. I just went, we're going to have girl time and said, you know, we're going to do this. And sometimes it was spur of the moment. And sometimes it was like, okay, on Monday, I'm going to take the girls and have girl time. And we didn't plan it out ahead of time. But I remember really clearly, like, I'd be like, okay, we're going to go girl time. What do you guys want to do? And they just start arguing. And the problem wasn't that they were arguing or even not arguing per se, but just kind of standing firm and I want to do this and I want to do that. The problem was that, like your dad, I had created these expectations about, oh, it's going to be mommy daughter time with both of her girls and it's going to be so great and we're going to have so much fun and we're going to have this great conversation and it's all going to be perfect. And it's that, you know, it wasn't perfect. It wasn't what I wanted it to be. And yet when I recognized that and just went, it's okay. Let them be. They'll figure it out. They would go through their argument and they would make a decision or they'd argue to a point where I just look at them and go, hey guys, that's enough arguing. So we're going to do this. And I would just pick something. But well, it's not that. That's the problem. It's the expectations. You nailed it.
And I know you've said this before and so have I. It's like, where does our stress come from in our families when the expectation and reality aren't the same?
Yeah.
And so let's get rid of expectations and live in the moment because that's the reality. And by doing this little thing, we can apply it to our whole lives, I guess, is the thing. But when we apply it to an adventure, it really can impart skills and opportunities for conversation that may not have existed all the time. And I know that we could like tangent off of that 100 times over, but we just want to thank you for being here on this episode. And if you like what you heard today, just make sure to like, subscribe, comment, and share, because that's how we connect with other parents of teens and 20-somethings. And if it's in your first time listening, we just want to say welcome and thank you for being here and sharing your time with us. At Mighty Parenting, we are more than just a podcast. We're a community that supports one another as we raise our teens and parent our young adults. You can become a Mighty Parent simply by visiting mightyparenting.com and get the resources and path that works for you. Until next time, I am Judy Davis here with Sandy Fowler, encouraging you to be a Mighty Parent.